Okay. All right. Good morning, everyone. So our shiur this morning, this class is dedicated by Abba Zevin Yafrila's Chus for Refuah Shalima, for Arli Basara, and for the incredible Simcha and Bracha for both of their families. There is also an additional dedication, a Mazel Tov to Mrs. Dina Gerber on the occasion of her birthday today. Mrs. Gerber, it wasn't Shoshana. It was your grandson. It was your grandson. I don't want to get your granddaughter-in-law in trouble. Mazel Tov, Adneva Esim Shanim Tovos. So let's begin. So last week we spent our shiur focusing a little bit on the Hakdama. We spoke about the power of Perek Shira, but more specifically focused on the authorship of Perek Shira and tried to understand the nature, the profundity of the Shira through the lens of the author. So this week, Emer Tzashem, will actually begin. So if you take a look at number one, so Perek Rishon, the first chapter of Perek Shira, has a number of different pieces. We're just going to focus on the first part. Hashamayim Omrim, the heavens. The heavens say, Hashamayim Misarpim Kivot Kel, Umaase Yodav Magit Harakio. So the heavens say, by the way, just before we actually get into this, I just, for the sake of full disclosure, we didn't go through all the possible authors of Perek Shira. There's an incredible historical debate. We spoke about two possibilities last week, about David HaMelech, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Others understand that it was also quite possibly Rabbi Akiva. I'm leaving that for a different time, because as we get to different parts of nature, we'll perhaps begin to see certain elements of Rabbi Akiva's personality come out. But just know, the authorship discussion is paused, but certainly not finished. Okay, back to number one. Shamayim Omrim. The heavens say, Hashamayim Misaprim Kavod Kel, Umaase Yodov Magit Harakia. What do the heavens say? The heavens tell of Hashem's glory, and the firmament tell of His handiwork. So incredible. Over here you'll see Perek Shira is, remember as we spoke about last week, are the statements, quote unquote, that the various parts of nature make, extolling and praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those statements, as you will see, come almost exclusively from Tehillim and Mishlei. So here, the heavens, their statement comes from number two, Tehillim Perek Yutes Pasuk Beis, again, Hashamayim Misapim Kavod Kel, Umaase Yodav Magid Harakia. So to appreciate what the Shamayim, what the heavens are saying, what the deeper message that they are conveying is, we have to take a step back. And let's take a step back into the creation of the Shamayim all the way in the beginning of Bereishis. So if you look at number three on your sheet, so the Pasuk says as follows, Vayomer Elokim. Now, just a word about this in general. When we speak about the various aspects of creation speaking, so do the various aspects of creation speak? Do they speak? So it appears that on some level, like the Gemara says, that Shlomo HaMelech, who was the wisest of all men, understood the speech of the birds. He understood the speech of the animal. Nature communicates. Nature gives off a message. I remember my grandmother, Zichrona Livracha, when we were little and we used to be by their house and there was a thunderstorm, some type of fierce storm. So as kids, we were scared. So she would always tell us, don't get scared. It's just the trees davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're rocking back and forth. They're just davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I remember as a child, it didn't really help, but at least as I got older, I understood the profundity in that. And this is my grandmother was a European Jew, Hungarian survivor, no formal Beis Yaakov education, anything like that. It came from an emunah pshuta, just a simple, beautiful, unadulterated belief that the world serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even the trees, when they're rocking back and forth, are shuckling, are davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there is a message in nature. The world communicates. There is now, whether obviously the speech of the heavens and the speech of the frog and the speech, it's not like our speech. Man has a dramatically different koach hadibor, but there is a message that nature communicates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that nature communicates to us. So again, what you see over here in number one is the message that the Shamayim gives. Who is this message to? Hashemayim Misaprim Kavod Kel Umaase Yodav Magid Harakia. We'll see who the message is to in just a moment. But let's take a look at number three. So we go back to the creation story. And again, as we go through Perek Shira, many times we'll be referencing back the Bereshis, the Genesis, the creation narrative, because so much of what we know about the natural world, the qualities of the natural world, stem from this story. So number three, all the way in the beginning of Bereshis. Vayomer Elokim, Yehi Rakia Besoch HaMayim, V'Mavdil Bein Mayim LaMayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let there be a Rakia in the middle of the mayim, in the middle of the water, so it should distinguish, to separate between one body of water and another body of water. Vayas Elokim es harakia, Kadosh Baruch Hu made the rakia. Vayavdel ben hamayim asher mitachas l'rakia, ubein hamayim asher me'al l'rakia vayichein. And what did the rakia do? The rakia served as a divider between the water above the rakia and the water below the rakia. Vayikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called this rakia shamayim. Vayerev vayivoker yom sheni. This was the second day. So this is something interesting. Generally, when we translate rakia, how do we translate rakia? Sky. So I'll tell you something. I learned something very important from my girls when they were learning these psukim, which was the first time they translated sky divider. Sky divider, you know how they say the positive sky divider, which actually is an incredible translation. Because rakia is not just the sky. You see clearly in the psukim that the goal of the rakia is not just simply to be a ceiling, but rather is to divide. Remember again, when we are first introduced to the world in the beginning of Bereshis, what does the Torah tell us? Ba'aretz haisu sohu vavohu, v'ruach Elokim rachefes al pnei hamayim. Although we are introduced to a world that is sohu vavohu, astonishingly empty, it's not empty. It's not empty. What's the first thing that's there?
Water.
Water is this, which by the way is exceptionally important, and that is why water itself serves as such an incredible source of purity on a literal and metaphorical sense. The whole notion of a mikvah being a source of purity. Why? Why does a body of water purify? Because water is the primordial substance. Water represents what the world was all the way at its beginning. A person goes into a mikvah, they change their state. They change their status. When you're enveloped by the primordial substance of creation, you have the ability to reinvent yourself. So the world is water. Water everywhere. HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces this rakia, which he later on calls the shamayim, to divide between the waters. There are upper waters and there are lower waters. Rashi says in number four, Pesoch HaMayim Be'emtz HaMayim She'esh Hefresh Bein Mayim Ha'elyonim L'Rakia Kimo Bein HaRakia LaMayim Sha'al Ha'aretz HaLamarato Shem Tluim Amarosh HaMelech. So this is amazing, by the way, because often we assume that the role of the Rakia is really to serve as a division between heaven and earth. Earth extends up to the Rakia, and the celestial sphere, God's, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's abode, is above the Rakia. But when you look at the Pasuk, it seems that the clear purpose of the Rakia, which then becomes known as Shamayim, is to divide between the Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. There are upper waters, celestial waters, and there are earthly waters. The point of the Shamayim is to divide between those two waters. What the celestial waters mean, what that represents, so this is part of a larger motif, which is not really our topic for now, which is anything that exists in this world exists in the celestial sphere as well. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world is a mirror image of our world, or maybe better stated, our world is a mirror image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. That's why, for example, Chazal speak about the Beis HaMikdash Shel Mala, Beis HaMikdash Shel Mata. There's a Beis HaMikdash of this world, there's a Beis HaMikdash of the celestial sphere. Does it mean that there's a literal physical Beis HaMikdash in the celestial sphere? Of course not. What it means is on some type of metaphorical or symbolic or spiritual level, everything that exists here in a physical state is replicated in the upper realm as well. There's water down here, there's Mayim down here, there's Mayim in the celestial sphere as well. I don't know what it means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's waters. I don't know what purpose they serve, but that's what Chazal teach us. But I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number five. The Sfas Emes. The Ger Rebbe quotes an amazing passage from the Zohar. So the Zohar says, so just so you understand what's happened. Before the second day, before the Rakia, before Shamayim, so apparently it appears that the universe, there was already light and darkness, that's already first day, but the universe in and of itself is consistent mostly of water. Remember again, land, as we know it, is formed during the third day and is further refined over the course of creation. So the world is water. The world is water. Upper waters, lower waters, but it seems to be one contiguous mass or body of water. Shemayim comes along and creates a division, but not just a division. What does it create? A barrier. There's a barrier. There's meaning. So it's not just a Kadosh Baruch Hu pulls the waters apart. These waters are here, these waters are there. There's an active separation, there's an active barrier between the upper waters and the lower waters. Writes the Sfas Emes. Number five. Ki amayim nechleku yihira ki abasoch amayim. So now the Sfas Emes quotes a dramatic statement by the Zohar. Umayim tachtonim bochim. The lower waters began to cry. The lower waters began to cry. Why did they begin to cry? Anan ba'inan lemehave kadamalka. Because we too want to be before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not fair. When there was no Shemayim, when there was no Rakia, when there was no sky divider, so the waters, I guess, existed in a more fluid state, and therefore any water could come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But now what happens? It's day number two, the Rakia, the Shemayim, is created. There's a division between heaven and earth. There's a division between upper waters and lower waters, and the lower waters begin to cry. They say it is not fair. Up until this point in time, again, it was only a day. It was only a day. But up until this point in time, we were able to serve before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now the Rakia cuts us off. The Shemayim cuts us off. We too want to have the ability to serve our Creator. The Zohar actually gets into it much. It's actually an incredibly emotional passage. It's a passage that highlights, you know, all of us have had a point in time where we've been separated from someone who we loved, either in more dramatic or less dramatic ways. Whether it's a family member that you had to say goodbye to for a little bit of time, sometimes a parent feels this every day when they have to send their kids off to school, a spouse has to go away on a trip. So that feeling of not being able to be with someone who you love, it creates and generates an incredibly acute feeling of pain. So you see this come up in the Mayim Tachtonim. The lower waters are pained, because here we existed before HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, and now they feel forever condemned to lead a life of divine isolation. We are isolated, we are separated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? So the Sfas Emes continues, number five, the end of the first line. V'kasvu chazal, huva barashi parshas vayikra, ki nichras bris lemayim tachtonim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a covenant with the lower waters. What's the covenant with the lower waters? Lahakriv mehem mayim b'chag umelach al karbonos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here's the deal, lower waters. You're right. You know, the beautiful part is, whenever someone says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to be close to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always responds in the same way, which is, of course. Let's figure out how to make that happen. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Mayim Tachtonim, you want to be close to me? Of course, here's what we're going to do. Mayim Tachtonim, you're going to have the opportunity to ascend on high through two different avenues. Number one, Nisuch HaMayim. Remember again, on the Yom Tov of Sukkis, there was a very unique sacrificial service called a water libation. In that water libation, water was literally poured on the Mizrach. It's only done one time of year. It happens to be on Sukkis, because Sukkis initiates the beginning of the rainy season. It's called Nisuch HaMayim. So where does the water come from Nisuch HaMayim? Where does it come from? Mayim Tachtonim. It's earthly waters. So earthly waters, you're going to go on the Mizbeach, you're going to go on the altar, by Sukkis Nisuch HaMayim, and not only that, but the Pasuk says, Al kol karbancha takriv melach, the halacha is, every single karban must be salted. Where does salt come from? Sea salt. So we're going to talk about this, actually that's the topic of our Parsha Shir tonight, about salt and Meretz Hashem, so I'm not going to delve too much into that right now. But suffice it to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mayim Tachtonim, don't be upset. You will have two dramatically beautiful sacrificial opportunities to come close to me, once on Sukkis over the course of Nisuch HaMayim, and every single karban must have salt. Salt comes from the water. So although you, water, do not actually go on the Mizbeach, you don't actually go on the altar with every single sacrifice, but your derivative, salt, must accompany every single carbon. And if you don't salt the carbon, what is the halacha? They can take a wild guess. This is a 50-50, right? The carbon is invalid. If you do not salt a sacrificial offering, the offering is invalid. If water, if mayim tachtonim, if earthly water is somehow not a part of the sacrificial service, the sacrifice is invalidated. And through this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calms the mayim tachtonim. We will have an ongoing relationship, even with the presence of the Rakia, even with the presence of Shamayim. Now, what's interesting about this is as follows. Because this dynamic of the Mayim Tachtonim Bochim, the lower waters are crying. And remember, they're crying because of the Rakia. They're crying because of Shamayim. They're crying because they feel that they have been cut out and expelled from before God. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu calms them by telling them, no, there will be an avenue for our continued relationship. Two avenues for our continued relationship. I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 6. Another Pasuk in Tehillim. I know we left Sefer Tehillim for now, but you can... A Jew never leaves Sefer Tehillim. It doesn't matter where you go. Tehillim is with you. So look at number 6. So this is actually a very dramatic pasuk. Al naros bavel, sham yashavnu gam bachinu bizachrinu esiyom. So the pasuk says, by the rivers of Bavel we sat and we wept when we remembered Zion. Which, by the way, is a fascinating pasuk. Just even before we go into it, because remember again, this is clearly... shows us that David HaMelech wrote Sefer Tehillim with Ruach HaKodesh. Right? Remember again, there are many kapitlach that refer ultimately to future events that happened many years after David HaMelech's death. So that he's writing about Babylonian exile, which was after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, which remember again, is a good probably 500 years after David HaMelech died. So that indicates to us that Tehillim was clearly written with a prophetic intuition. So this pasuk is linked to a dramatic medrash in Eicha Rabbah. Look at number 7. So I need to give you a little bit of background to this. The background to this medrash is as follows. I do this medrash every Tisha B'Av because to me it's one of the most moving pieces of rabbinic literature, midrashic literature on the Churban. The backdrop to this is as follows. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he told no one. He told no one of his plans, meaning even his kitchen and, you know, angelic kitchen cabinet. He didn't tell anyone. So that when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the heavens are taken by surprise. And no one knows what to do. The Malachim come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's actually very dramatic. The Medrash HaYetzer, like, the Malachim find HaKadosh Baruch Hu crying. And the Malach Gavriel comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, Ribono Shel Olam, let me cry, but we can't see you cry. We can't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu cry. So I'll cry, Gavriel says, I'll cry, you be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ribono Shel Olam says to the Malachim, stop talking to me, because if you don't stop talking to me right this moment, I'll turn the entire world back to Tohu Vavohu. So pained is HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Malachim scramble to figure out who could intervene with God on behalf of the Jewish people. So Avram comes and Yitzchak comes and Sarah Rivka. This is the famous Medrash where it's Rachel Imenu who is answered. Rachel Mavaka Abba HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in the middle of this Medrash, the Navi Yirmiyahu decides to go get Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, the trusted shepherd of Klal Yisrael. Moshe, you got Klal Yisrael out of some pretty bad spots, right? Chet Ha'egel, sin of the golden calf, sin of the spies. Moshe Rabbeinu, you could figure this out. So Yirmiyahu goes, it's actually dramatic, he goes to the Ivar Yadin, because remember, what's the problem if you want to get Moshe Rabbeinu? No one knows where he's buried. So the Navi Yirmiyahu goes to Ivar Yadin, he goes to the banks of the Jordan River. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're being summoned to the heavens. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes, says to Yirmiyahu, what's going on? And it's dramatic. Yirmiyahu can't get the words out. He can't say the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. He can't say the Jews have been taken to exile. He can't say it. So he stammers and he stutters and he fumfers until Moshe Rabbeinu says, gets it out of him. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi tells him everything that's happened. That's where number 7 picks up. Bo'osa Sha'a. A very dramatic medrash. Ba'osa Shah, Amr Moshe the Yirmiyahu. In that moment, when Yirmiyahu disclosed to Moshe Rabbeinu what had happened, the Beis HaMikdash had been destroyed, Klal Yisrael had been exiled. So Moshe says to Yirmiyahu, Leich Lefanai, lead me. Show me where Klal Yisrael is. Lech lefanai, she'ilech ve'avi'em, ve'era mi maniach yado aleihem. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu feels that he could turn this situation around. It's bad, but like I said, Moshe Rabbeinu has been in bad before. He's been in really bad before. And he turned it around before. Can you hear me, oh? Excuse me, sorry. Thank you very much. Thank you. So he says, Yirmiyahu, take me to them and let me try to figure this out. Amar lo Yirmiyahu, dramatic medrash. Second line, number 7. Eafshar leilech baderech mipnei haharugim. So Yirmiyahu says to Moshe, I would take you, but we can't walk on the road. The road is littered with Jewish corpses. There's no way to walk to them. Amrale afapikin. Moshe says, Yirmiyahu, just take me. Just show me the way. Miyad halach Moshe v'Yirmiyahu lefanov. Moshe Avinu makes his way to Klal Yisrael. Yirmiyahu is leading him. Ad shehigiu l'naros Bavel. Till they get to the rivers of Bavel. They get to the rivers of Bavel. So remember again, Klal Yisrael is being led out to exile to Babylonia, to Babylon, to Bavel. They get to the rivers. Now listen to this episode. Ra'uhu l'Moshe. So Klal Yisrael is sitting broken by the rivers of Bavel. They see Moshe Rabbeinu coming. Va'amru zeh lazeh, they say to each other, Ba ben Amram mikivra liftosenu miyad sarenu. So the people, for the first time, are filled with hope. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu was showing up, it could only be for one reason, and that is, what's Moshe Rabbeinu's entire tachlis? Moshe is the savior. Moshe is the shepherd. What does the shepherd do? When the flock is in trouble, the shepherd extricates the flock from the dire circumstances. So Klal Yisrael is all tzibrachen, all broken. And they see Moshe Rabbeinu by the banks. They say, oh, Ba ben Amram mikivro liftosinim yatzarenu. See, Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave to redeem us. Yotze sabaskol v'amra gezerehi milafanai. Baskal, a voice from heaven, comes up out and says, no. Gezeira hi milafanai. This is a divine decree that the Beis HaMikdash is to be destroyed, that Klal Yisrael is to go into Golos, and that a period of difficulty and suffering is about to ensue. So now, miyad, Amar lahem Moshe. Moshe says to them, Bonai, lahachzir eschem i'efshar. My children, I can't bring you home. I can't bring you home. Shekvar nigzira gezeira. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu has decreed that right now you're not coming home. Ela hamokom yachzir eschem b'mehira. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a bracha. The bracha is that Kadosh Baruch Hu should bring you home quickly. Kadosh Baruch Hu should bring you home soon. V'hiniach osam. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to leave. He had to leave. He could not save them. He was broken. They were broken. Ba'osa sha'a, heiramu kolam bebichia gidola. In that moment, Klal Yisrael began to cry, and even a more intense cry. Now understand the dynamic that's happened over here. You know, when a person encounters difficult circumstances, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the most incredible bracha, right? What is the most incredible bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has endowed mankind with? Resiliency. The ability to adapt. Right? Tears or griddles. Any answer is correct, right? Right? The ability to adapt. The ability to adapt. Right? And this happens to all of us. We face circumstances. We say, there is no way I'm going to be able to deal with this. And then what happens? We deal with it. It's not easy. It's not easy, but we adapt. So Klal Yisrael had already become settled with the notion the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we're going out to Golos. But you know what happens? When you resign yourself to something, and then you see a glimmer of hope, and you once again develop within yourself a sense of optimism, a sense of hope, a sense of purpose. So then what happens? When that optimism, that hope evaporates, the pain becomes even more acute. So Klal Yisrael had accepted the fact that we were going into Golos. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But then when you see Moshe Rabbeinu come back from the grave, and you see him standing right in front of you, there's only one logical conclusion you could reach, which is, He's coming to redeem us. He's coming to take us home. And so they allowed themselves once again to hope. They allowed themselves once again to feel that incredible energy of Jewish optimism surge through their veins. And when the Baskel comes out and says, Gzeirei Milafanai, here's what's amazing. Even when the Baskel comes out and says, it's my decree, what does Klal Yisrael think is going to happen? You see, Moshe Rabbeinu has heard God before say, this is my decree. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu counter? No, it's not. Now, don't try this at home. But remember again, this was the godless of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu stares down God. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, that's not how we're going to do it. You want to destroy Klal Yisrael after the Chayit HaEgel? Well, I'm with them. I'm with them. So if you're going to destroy them, then erase. Every single time HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to do something that is not, quote unquote, in the best interest of Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, you're not going to do it. So Klal Yisrael is standing there. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back from the grave. They see Moshe's here to take us home. The Baskel comes out and says, Gzeirei Milafanai. And what is Klal Yisrael waiting for? What are they waiting for? They have front row seats to a divine showdown. They're waiting for Moshe to throw down the gloves and say, no, this is not what we're going to do. You can't treat your children this way. You can't behave with Klal Yisrael that way. But even the great Moshe Rabbeinu understood that Gezerehi Melefonai in this context meant Gezerehi Melefonai. And Moshe Rabbeinu says words that he never said to Klal Yisrael before. He says to them, Lahachzir Eschem Iefsha. I can't help you. I can't help you. There's nothing I can do for you in this circumstance except to give you a bracha. Shamakom yachzir eschem b'mehira. And in that moment, when the great Moshe Rabbeinu, the great defender of Klal Yisrael, the great advocate of the flock, the man who was not scared to do battle with God himself for the benefit of the Jewish people, said to them, I am powerless. I can't do anything. The only thing I could do is I can give you a bracha, which of course to get a bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu was an incredible thing as well. Then the pain becomes even more acute. Because then the finality of their circumstances is compounded. If Moshe Rabbeinu can't help, if Moshe Rabbeinu can't do something, then I guess this is really the end. Not the end of Klal Yisrael, but the end of life as we knew it. And therefore, again, they begin to cry. That's when the pasuk says, "Al Naharos Bavel, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Bizachrinu Esiyon." So the Medrash understands that the crying on Naharos Bavel was not just simply a crying over exile; it was a crying because of what just transpired with Moshe Rabbeinu, the powerlessness of Moshe Rabbeinu to affect change in these circumstances, which thereby highlighted to them the finality, the profundity of their circumstances. So they cried. They cried. But I want to show you an amazing medrash. Take a look at number 8. So I want to show you, before we get this, I want to show you what's interesting about this pasuk. So go back to number 6 for just a moment. Right, so look at the pasuk. Al Naharos Bavel Sham Yashavnu. So there we sat, Gam Bachinu. Now, Gam Bachinu, how do we translate it? We also cried. So the way we generally read the Pasuk is, what does it mean? We were by the river of Bavel, right? And the Pasuk is telling us all the things we did by the river. What did we do by the river? 3 things. Number 1, sat. Number 2, cried. Number 3, we remembered. The Medrash says no. The Medrash, look at number 8. Gam Bachinu, Bachinu im Hamayim. So the Medrash says something amazing. The Medrash says, Gam Bachinu means, not we also cried, meaning that we sat, we remembered, and another thing we did, we also cried. Gam Bachinu means, we also cried with someone else who was crying. Who else was crying when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Who else was crying? Kadosh Baruch Hu, of course, but who else was crying? The Mayim Tachtonim, the lower waters. The lower waters were also crying. Al Naharos Bavel. Remember again, the Naharos Bavel, right? Those rivers that run through Bavel, right? Those are the rivers that are identified at the beginning of Bereshis as the 5 tributaries of Gan Eden. Where is Klal Yisrael sitting? They're sitting by one of the Gan Eden tributaries, one of the Gan Eden waterways. And they're crying. Who's crying? Gan Bachinu. We cried along. Who did we cry along with? We cried along with the waters. Because the Mayim Tachtonim are crying also. Because the Mayim Tachtonim were promised from the beginning of creation. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Shamayim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Rakia, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the divider between the earthly waters and the celestial waters. And the earthly waters begin to cry, Ritzoneinu liras, we also want to see God. We also want to, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't cry. I promise you, I'm going to give you two avenues. Nisach HaMayim, the water libation of Sukkis, the salt of every carbon. And now when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, Klal Yisrael says, we're sitting with the waters. And the waters are crying uncontrollably. Why? Because they have been cut off from the heavens. And when the waters cry, Klal Yisrael, we begin to cry with them. Because the waters say, we now no longer have any avenue of connection. We are cut off by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't have the ability to rise up. We're stuck. And so Klal Yisrael begins to cry with the waters. Why do we cry with the waters? Because we assumed that with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the exile from Eretz Yisrael, that we were also stuck. That we would not be able to rise up either. That our ability to accomplish was stunted. That our ability to self-actualize was negated. That our ability to accomplish anything great evaporated along with the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, look at the next pasuk. Take a look at number 9. A little bit later in that kapitel, what do we say? Eich noshir es shir Hashem al admas nechar. What does the Jews say in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash? How will we ever be able to sing? How can we sing outside of our beloved Eretz Yisrael? How could we sing without our beloved Beis HaMikdash? How could we sing without all of those trappings that were part of the fabric of our Jewish life? But then something amazing happens, which is, we continue to sing. We adapted. By the way, not only did we adapt, but our exile became a golden age of Torah development. We're exiled to Bavel. What happens in Bavel? What happens in Bavel is Sura, Pumpadisa, Narda, the greatest Torah centers in the world. Talmud Bavli, Babylonian Talmud. Remember again, there are two editions of the of Gemara, of Talmud. There's Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi. Which one is considered to be more authoritative? Bavli. Amazingly enough, we're sitting by the waters. The waters are crying uncontrollably because they are cut off from God. And we assumed also, we cried along. Why do we cry along? Because we're also cut off from God. No Beis HaMikdash. Remember again, for those Jews who witnessed the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, all they knew, their parents knew, their grandparents knew, the first Beis stood for over 400 years, all multiple generations knew, was life with a Beis HaMikdash. So if all you know is life with a Beis HaMikdash, you assume that when the Beis HaMikdash is no longer there, then what happens? What happens? Spiritual life comes to a grinding halt. And then something amazing happens. We're transplanted to an alien land, and not only do we survive, but we thrive. Not only do we pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off, but we become something absolutely and amazingly significant. Because at the end of the day, here is a difference between man and the waters. You see, if you go back, I didn't put this all on the sheet, but if you look at Bereshis, right? If you want to summarize all of the Genesis narrative, so how can you do it? You could borrow the words of Shlomo HaMelech, right? Lachol zman va'is. Lachol zman va'is. Or you could say, lachol makom. Everything has its place. Everything has its boundary. Remember again, what is the creation story? HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates something, and then what does He tell it? What does He command it? Right? He commands the parameters of its existence. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates light and darkness. And then what's the next thing He does? He says, light, you're going to be by day. Darkness, you're going to be by night. Sun, you're by day. Moon, by night. Stars, you're at night. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates land. The land is created how? HaKadosh Baruch Hu causes the waters to recede. And what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, waters, waters, you are allowed to come to here, but you can't come any further. Kadosh Baruch Hu, everything in life has boundaries. Kadosh Baruch Hu creates the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom. They exist within boundaries. The story of Bereishis, the story of creation, is all about boundaries. But there is one dramatically notable exception. Take a look at number three. Number 10. So number 10, the pasuk says, "Vayivarech osam Elokim, vayomer Elohim Elokim peru urevu umilu es haaretz vikivshua." Kadosh Baruch Hu tells, this is Adam and Chava, tells man, and he says to them, "Peru urevu, be fruitful and multiply, milu es haaretz, go ahead, fill up the earth, vikivshua." Kivshua literally means what? So the English is subdue it, but it really means, lichbosh means to capture something. Capture it. Uridu b'degasayam, rule over the fish of the sea, ubav shamayim, and the birds of the heavens, ubechol chayo haromeses al haaretz, and ultimately again on any animal that tread upon the earth. This, what is this divine mandate of the kivshua? To capture, to subdue the earth. So if you look at the Ramban, a famous Ramban, number 11, the Ramban writes, "Vikiv Shua, Nasan lahem koach umemshala ba'aretz, la'asos kirtsonam bebehemos, ubishratzim uvechol zochale afar." Kadosh Baruch Hu says to man, "I am giving you control over the earth. The earth is yours. The earth is yours. Hashamayim, shamayim, Hashem, va'aretz, nosan, livnei, Adam. The earth is yours. Rule over the animals. Rule over everything as you choose. Vilivnos, build. La kornatua, uproot stuff. Umahare, lachtsov, nechoshes. And what should you do? Go ahead and bore through the mountains." Do you know, my kids always make fun of me about this. To me, when I go to Eretz Yisrael, so people get inspired by different things, right? People get inspired by the Kosol, Kever Rachel, there's no shortage of inspirational. You know what gives you the greatest amount of his odorous in Eretz Yisrael? The roads. What I mean by that, not because I enjoy driving there, but because, do you know, you see how they build roads in Eretz Yisrael? You see the new roads that are coming out of Yerushalayim now? How do they build them? They bore through mountains. They bore through mountains. That's v'kivshua. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, there's a mountain in your way, go through it. There's a mountain in your way, bore through it. Nothing stands in the way of man's accomplishment. And if there is something that is in your way, move it, build it, demolish it, bore through it. Whatever you have to do, make it happen. La kornatua, umahara nachzov nechoshes. You could mine copper from the mountains. Do whatever you want with the mountains. Ukiyotse baza, v'zayichlo mashom v'chalar. So this is amazing. The Ramban says, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, animals, you live in this part of the world. Water, you could only occupy this amount of space. Sun, light, moon, stars, all of you have your desired spots. Man, the world is yours. The world is yours. You can be whatever you want to be, and you could use the world. You could use the world however you deem fit. Obviously, in a responsible way. Obviously, with derech eretz towards nature. Of course, all of these things are, of course, understood. But this is v'kif shua. You ever wonder why it is that we have such an interest in space? You ever think to yourself, we've got so much going on, like right here. Do we really need to be worried about what's happening on Mars, on Jupiter, or anywhere else? Where does that insatiable curiosity to find out what is happening beyond our where does that come from? That's v'kiv shua. It's the same place why researchers try to find a cure for cancer. Why don't we just accept there's illness, there's sickness in this world, let's just accept it. Man can't accept anything. Because at the end of the day, kiv shua, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, figure it out. Figure it out. The world is yours, and the answers to everything are here. But you have to figure out how to go through the mountains. You have to figure out how to overcome the obstacles. The mountains are yours, the fish are yours, the birds are yours, the sky is yours, everything is yours. You have, man has no boundaries. I say that obviously with a caveat. Of course we have boundaries. We have spiritual boundaries, religious boundaries, theological boundaries. But in terms of our relationship with the world is ours. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not by night, not by day, it's all yours. V'kiv shua. Man can be whatever he chooses to be. There are no boundaries. And this is an incredible idea. Because, you know, the moon, no matter how badly it wants to be the sun, at the end of the day, even if it does a great job at being the moon, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to call it and say, you know, moon, I've been watching you. You've been doing excellent, right? You rise at the right time, you diminish, you become... We've talked about it. We're going to promote you to being the sun. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. The zebra, no matter how wonderful it may be, is never going to become a lion. It's impossible. It's just not the way the world has worked. If you're a zebra, you're a zebra. If you're a moon, you're a moon. If you're a termite, you're a termite. Whatever you are, that's what you remain. There's one exception to that in the universe, and that's man. Man can become whatever he or she chooses to become. That's the kifshua. That's the kifshua. You choose your destiny. You choose your identity. You choose what you are and you choose what you're not. Your sky is the limit. Actually, it's not even going to be totally true. The sky is not even the limit. But you choose, that's the kifshua. The kifshua means the world is yours. You choose what you want to be. You have no boundaries. And now, if we link it back, we begin to see in Parak Shira what the Shamayim is really saying. Take a look at number 12. So I'm sorry, before we get to this, so now you begin to understand something dramatically amazing. You see, Klal Yisrael thought that our ability to self-actualize was tethered to Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash. That's why Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu. You see, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the lower waters were cut off. The lower waters were cut off. They did not have the ability to ascend to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like they once did. We assumed we were the same. Without a Beis HaMikdash, without being in Eretz Yisrael, I can't self-actualize. And then something amazing happens, which is, we were wrong. What's the amazing... You know what the greatest proof that we were wrong is? Over 2,000 years later, we're sitting here, learning, growing, and we're learning these stories about our ancestors. Our ancestors thought that the story ended by the rivers of Bavel, because they thought the lower waters are cut off, we're cut off also. The Jew is never cut off. The Jew is never, and by the way, this is not just something for Jews, this is for human beings. But specifically, the Jew is never cut off. Why? The kivshuha. Kivshuha means what? Wherever you are, you have the opportunity for greatness. Wherever you are, you have the ability for self-actualization. Wherever you are, you have the ability to create and embrace a magnificent destiny. The only limitations you have in life are the ones you place on yourself. Now, it is true. Many of us have life circumstances. Everyone has circumstances. Everyone has stuff. And that stuff often you cannot choose. Those circumstances are often visited upon you. But how you choose to deal with those circumstances, what you choose to do with that stuff, you still have a kifshua. Everyone has a different kifshua, but that call of kifshua is the same for each of us. This just as an aside, the Piyajetzna, the Ish Kodesh, has a beautiful piece where he discusses this. He asks the fundamental question as to why Torah wasn't given in Eretz Yisrael. If you think about it, if you were staging, if you were part of the event planning committee for Matan Torah, right, where would you house the event? Right, where? Where? Harabayis, right? Not in Yerushalayim. I'm going to put it in the Waldorf. It doesn't belong in the Waldorf, right? Where does it belong? It belongs in Harabayis, right? The site of the Beis HaMikdash, Akidas Yitzchak, all incredible things. So, where was the Torah given? Desert. Har Sinai. Where's Har Sinai? We have no idea. Actually, some people say they know, but the Pashas, we have no idea. Right? So what's amazing to note is as follows, which is the greatest revelation in the history of man. We don't even know the address. We don't even know, like, we can't make a pilgrimage, we can't go back, we can't visit, we can't picnic. No, nothing. You can't. Why? So the Piyajetzna says something amazing. He says, because if you wouldn't know the address for the Torah, if Torah would have been given in Eretz Yisrael, you would have thought that what? That there's only Torah in Eretz Yisrael. I'm a big Zionist. I love Eretz Yisrael. I'd be there in a heartbeat if other members of my mishpacha were willing to go. But never think for a second that your spiritual growth is dependent on your residency in the land. It's not true. It's true. Eretz Yisrael is a different kind of ruchnius. Eretz Yisrael is a different kind of spirituality. We know this. You know it because you feel different when you're there. But never for a second think that Eretz Yisrael has cornered the market on spirituality. The Jew could be holy wherever he or she is. The Jew could have a dramatic and powerful and passionate relationship to God wherever he or she is. It doesn't make it. Eretz Yisrael certainly is beneficial. Eretz Yisrael is magnificent, beautiful. That's the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets his eyes upon. But says the Piaget, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Torah in the middle of nowhere to tell us that what? Wherever you are, geographically or emotionally, spiritually, circumstantially, if you want Torah, if you want holiness, if you want self-actualization, it is yours to be had. V'kiv shuha. If you want to sum up all of Yiddishkeit into one word, you can make a bumper sticker. Kiv shuha. Capture it. Subdue it. The world is ours. And it is up to us to do with it as we want. It is up to us to create and to seize that destiny. Everything else in creation has boundaries. Man does not. Now, this is a little bit of a scary lesson. Why is it a little bit of a scary lesson? Right? Because if I don't become something significant, then I have no one to blame but myself. This is an incredibly important idea. Because a lot of times in life, when we are not happy with the people we are, we love to deflect that. My mother didn't love me enough. My father didn't play catch with me. My second grade teacher didn't give me one less cookie than everyone else. You know, I wasn't as gifted in this. I wasn't as gifted. And I'm leaving it aside, there's no question that our parents and our upbringing and our education has an incredible impact on who we are. But at the end of the day, the buck of your life stops with you. You and only you are responsible for the person you choose to be. Other people could have an impact. Other people leave their positive marks or chas v'shalom, their scars. But at the end of the day, I become the person I choose to be. That's v'kiv shuha. I have no boundaries. I can choose to be who I want to be. Now let's turn this back around. Let's link this back. Look at number 12. So what did the Shamayim say? So back, I just quoted the pasuk again in number 12. So remember, 12 is the same pasuk in Tehillim that we saw in Parak Shira. Hashemayim isafim kivod kel, umaaseyodav magid harakia. So on the most basic level, again, remember, if you want to understand this pasuk, remember, I feel like I have to be honest with you. You don't have to make Parak Shira as complicated as we're making it. Right? You can read it, and it's very pretty, and it's very beautiful, and it's all of creation speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on a very simple level, what's happening over here is, what do the heavens say? The heavens say, look at us. Look at us, and you could see the glory of God. The sky tells the work of his hands. And we know this. The truth is, it's actually a very simple message. Look up into the sky. Look up into the sky. And if you're a feeling and thoughtful person, you're overwhelmed by the magnitude of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bria. Look at number 13. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisod Torah, V'heichi aderech la'ahavaso. How do you come to love and to revere God? Right? What's the derech to love and revere God? Listen to what the Rambam says. Maimonides. Rambam doesn't say open up a Gemara. Rambam doesn't even say go do chesed. Look what the Rambam says. B'shor sheyizbonin ha'adam b'ma'asav u'beruav ha'niflam ha'gedolim. V'yir mechach ma'asav shein la'erech v'lokeitz. Miyat hu ohev u'mishabech u'mefa'er u'misave taiva gedola leidei Hashem ha'gol. The Rambam says, you want to fall in love with God? You know how you fall in love with God? Fall foliage. You know how you fall in love with God? A sunset. Fall in love with God, the ocean. Look at nature. You look at nature, you actually could have some of the most stirring emotional and theological, religious, spiritual experiences can be had through looking at nature. The world is gorgeous. The world is beautiful. You know, Jews, we tend to cluster in inner cities. So, you know, we don't live out in the country, right? Even when Jews talk about going to the country, I'm not talking about the Catskills. That's not the country, right? I mean, we live in urban areas. We have to, right? By design, our religion is set up that we have to be next to each other. I have to be in walking distance to a shul. I mean, so by definition, we're urban dwellers. But if you get out of the city a little bit and you see the world is magnificent, the world is gorgeous. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rambam says, you want to fall in love with God? Fall in love with his creations. Fall in love with the great Rav Soloveitchik in his essays on Tefillah. Quotes from William James. And William James said that one could feel the breath of infinity on the nape of their neck by staring into the starlit sky. And he, so meaning the idea being that this is not necessarily a well-refined faith, not necessarily a complex emunah, but a very simple idea. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a magnificent world, and I see the greatness of God through His creations. So on a very simple level, that is what the Shemayim are saying. The world, you want to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shemayim is Sarpin Kavod Kel. Look at us. Look at the heavens. Just look up in the heavens. Look at the sun. Look at the moon. Look at the stars. Look at the clouds. Look at all the different cloud formations. Look at the sky. And you'll be able to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Pashat Pshat. But look at number 14 for just a moment. But perhaps Shemayim is really saying something a little bit different. So the Yalkut Shemoni has a dramatically different interpretation of this pasuk. He says, Shemayim is from Kavod Kel, Umaase Yodav Magid Harakia. So again, if you look at the pasuk itself, it's a little bit redundant. Now, normally, we don't ask questions about redundancies on Tehillim. Why not? Why not? Because Tehillim is poetry. So poetry follows a different set of rules. And redundancy is sometimes very much part of the poetic prose, or poetic structure. So what Yakut is picking up on is as follows. The pasuk is comprised of two parts. Hashemayim Misarpim Kavod Kel, the heavens speak to the greatness of God, right? Recite the glory of God. Umaase yodav magid harakia. So the way we translated that up until now, and the sky tells the work of His hands, His being Kadosh Baruch Hu. The sky shows the greatness of Kadosh Baruch Hu's handiwork. Writes the Yakut something amazing. Hachi kamar. Yakut says no. The pasuk actually has two different subjects. The first part of the pasuk, Hashemayim Misarpim Kavod Kel, means exactly as it is. Look at the heavens, and you'll see the greatness of God. What does it mean? Umaase yodav magid harakia. Hachi kamar, maaseim shel tzadikim mi magid. Ultimately, again, what it means is as follows: who speaks to the greatness of the acts of the righteous? What is it in nature that shows us how great, how powerful the tzadik is? Mi magid? Who tells us? Harakia. The sky shows us how great and how powerful the tzadik is. How does the sky show us how great and how powerful the tzaddik is? Second line, number 14. Umay nihu matar. How does the sky show the greatness of the tzaddik? Through rain. She'al yidei tfilas hatzaddikim matar ba li'olam. Because through the prayers of the righteous, rain comes down to the earth. So the Gemara is filled with stories about great people, who went ahead and davened, had the ability of koach of rain. The most well-known, Choni Ma'agel has a grandson by the name of Abba Chilkia's wife, Mrs. Abba Chilkia, also had this koach. So according to the Yalkut, the way you read this pasuk is as follows. Hashemayim Misarpim Kavod Kel. The heavens show the greatness of God's handiwork. Ma'aseh Yodav, the Yalkut says, refers to who? To the tzaddik. Ma'aseh Yodav. If you want to see the great power of the tzaddik, where do you look? Magid harakia. The rakia will show you. Because the rakia will sometimes only bring forth rain because of what? Because of the power of the tzaddik. So maybe we could take this Yalkut Shemoni and just interpret it a little bit differently. Perhaps what it means is as follows. Hashemayim Misarpim Kavod Kel. Yes, the heavens ultimately bespeak and highlight the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uma'aseh Yodav Magid Harakia. Do you know what the Rakia is constantly talking about? What, you ever wonder to yourself, what does the Rakia talk about all day, right? Sitting up there all day, day after day, year after year. What does the Rakia talk about? The Rakia talks about Ma'aseh Yodav. The Rakia talks about the greatness of man. The Rakia, Ma'aseh Yodav, the actions of man, Magid Harakia. The Rakia speaks about. Why is the Rakia speaking about, by the way, not just the tzaddik, all mankind. Why is the Rakia speaking about the actions of man? Because the Rakia is amazed by one simple thing. The Rakia, the Shamayim, is beautiful. But it is what it is. The Shamayim will never become something different. The Shamayim can't evolve. The Shamayim can't change. The Shamayim can't decide that it wants to see something bluer or more beautiful or more expansive or greater or holier. The Shamayim is magnificent, but it's one dimensional. It is what it is. It has a conferred identity, and it cannot alter or change that identity. So the Shemaim is sitting there looking down on us every single day. And the Shemaim says, look at me, because through me you can see the greatness of God. But there's something else that the Shemaim is gripped by. Umaaseh yodav magid harakiyah. The Shemaim looks at us the whole day. And the Shemaim says, oh, if only I could be a human being. Why? Because human beings live a kiv shuha life. Human beings can evolve. Human beings could change. Human beings could transcend. Human beings could self-actualize. The Shemaim is absolutely magnificent. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. But ma'aseh yodav magid harakiyah. The Rakia looks at us, and the Rakia sees ma'aseh yodav. Through the smallest of actions that we do in life, we change ourselves. We evolve. We grow. You know, sometimes we think that spiritual development is somehow linked or anchored in dramatic life activity. Like if you really want to be a tzaddik or a great person, you have to do something that's headline grabbing. You have to do something that's going to change the world. You know, people don't really change the world. They change themselves. And if you change yourself enough, and you help you change yourself, inspire others to do the same. That's how world change happens. Ma'aseh yodav means derakia sisri. Even the smallest things that we do, we self-actualize, we evolve, we become even greater. And the Rakia looks down on us longingly. Here's the incredible irony. We often look up at the sky. And you know, when you look up at the sky long enough, how do you feel? Small. It's very humbling. You feel insignificant. Because, you know, we often go through life thinking that we're the center of the universe. I mean, of course I'm the center of the universe. What's more important than me? And then you look up at the sky and you realize that there's a billion stars out there, each of them multiple times larger than I am. To say I'm a cog in the wheel is guzma, is hyperbole. I'm not even a cog. I don't even know like if I'm even like a this, you know, whatever. Like, we look at the heavens, we see the expansiveness in the heavens, and it makes us feel so small. What Perek Shir is telling us is Shemayim looks down on us, and Shemayim feels so small. Because Shemayim says, I might be big, I might be vast, I might be beautiful, I might be enormous, I might be overwhelming in my beauty. I am the direct result of the handiwork of God. But wow, mankind, I don't hold a candle to you. Umaaseh yodav magid harakia. Because we possess something that nothing else in nature possesses. The gift of vikiv shuha. Everything else in the natural world is what it is confined by the identity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu vested it with. It is only man who has the great gift of kiv shuha, the great gift to become whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want. And so when we sat on Naros Bavel, when we sat by the rivers of Gan Eden that went by Bavel, and Gan Bachinu, we cried with the waters, because the waters said, we're cut off, we're Mayim Tachtonim, we no longer have an avenue, and we cried along with them because we too thought that we were cut off. Shemayim was looking down on us and said, oh Jews, you're so wrong, Umaaseh yodav magid harakia. You don't even know what you're going to accomplish. You don't even know what's still in store for you. Because nothing could confine you. Because when you are given the bracha of kivshuha, you could truly become whatever you want. Hashemayim misaprim kivot kel. It is true that the heavens highlight the handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beautiful creation. But the greatest thing the heavens do, umaaseh yodav magid harakia. All day long, they speak about the great potential and great opportunities that we have. All right, we'll stop here for today. We'll pick up in Meretz Shalom, the rest of the Parak Rishon next time.